Cougar Nation, welcome again aboard the Hype Train podcast. And boys, we are, what, 9 days away?
Ten? Well, as of recording, we're 11, right? And if you're listening to this on the first full day it's out, then 10.
10 days. Okay, fine. 10 days. But we have college football this weekend. We have the game of the year. UMass is playing UConn. Do I have that right? It's the Sickos game of the year.
It's the You Stink Bowl is what we're going to call it.
I mean, game, we joke on week zero, and there are terrible games with the exception of one. Notre Dame versus Navy in Ireland is going to be like an ESPN instant classic. Like, yes. I'm calling it, like, that's going to be that game's going to be fun as heck.
I am so excited.
The Fighting Irish in Ireland, the dome or the gold helmets versus the gold helmets, right? Like, that's going to be a friggin' sick game. The rest of them, after that, it gets incredibly bad incredibly quick.
Well, you get USC and San Jose State on the Pac-12 network, but sorry, I misspoke. It's UMass New Mexico State, which is on prime time, 5 Eastern or 5 o'clock Mountain Time on ESPN. While number 6 USC is playing San Jose State on the Pac-12 network. Like, that is just, that's perfection.
But it's the Big Ten's fault and Big 12's fault that the Pac-12 has fallen.
Like, this is my fan fiction. This is, like if I had to write a BYU fan's fantasy about how bad the Pac-12 is, it would be UMass New Mexico State playing in prime time while the Pac-12's biggest brand is behind a paywall.
It's the verbal meme of the Eric Andre show where he like shoots the guy in the chair and then turns and is like, why would Blank do this? It's the Pac-12 airing Caleb Williams starting his Heisman defending season and number 6 USC opening the year on the Pac-12 network, shooting the Pac-12 dead and then turning to the camera and being like, why did Brett Yormark do this? Like, that's what, like, you want answers of why the Pac-12 has fallen apart. Look no further than week zero is like, in a nutshell, the demise of the Pac-12 is like, let's put the best college football player in the country who could be going for 2 straight Heismans, who's going to be the number 1 overall pick in the NFL draft next year, and a playoff contending USC team. It's the game one. Let's put them on the Pac-12 network where no one's going to be able to watch them, instead of putting them on ESPN in a window where, let's face it, like, if they were on ESPN, everyone would be watching. Like, USC San Jose State's not a great game, but you put Caleb Williams and USC on ESPN in week zero because the other games are so crappy, like, everyone's watching. But instead, they're like, no, let's make sure no one can watch Caleb Williams and USC.
But let's be honest, I'm going to watch the heck out of that UMass New Mexico State game. Like, even if I have to record it and watch it later, like, I feel like you can't call yourself a true college football fan if you're not going to watch that football game.
There was a game. It was Austin Peay versus somebody, and it was
Jacksonville,
like
State, I think.
It was like week zero of 2020, when like we didn't know if college football was happening, and then like let's put 2 FCS teams on ESPN, and I was watching that game, and that was like the awakening of me being like, oh, I'm a freaking weirdo. Like, this isn't normal behavior. Like, if I were to go to work tomorrow and, like, talk to people and be like, you guys watch Austin Peay versus Jacksonville State?
Just around,
like,
the water
what
cooler.
What are you talking about? Like, this isn't normal, typical guy behavior. Like, this is sicko energy. And, like, that's exactly what week zero of college football is. Outside, because most people are going to watch Notre Dame, Navy. But if you watch any other games this Saturday, you're a sicko. You should be locked away. But, like, we're all going to do it, and it's going to be awesome.
Which, like, for reference, UTEP Jacksonville State has a better TV window than USC San Jose State. They're at least
UTEP,
on linear TV.
Yeah.
FIU Louisiana Tech, 7 p.m.
Great.
On CBS College Sports.
Hell yeah. Awesome. Louisiana Tech.
Hawaii Vanderbilt.
What's the spread?
Just imagine.
Hawaii Vanderbilt, that honestly, that one's screaming my name right now.
How bad is Hawaii Vanderbilt's a 17.5 point favorite in that game?
Oh gosh.
And Vanderbilt doesn't even have a football stadium this year.
No.
Like, half their football stadium is demolished.
I think they're literally playing in a high school.
Yeah. If you Can you call yourself a college football fan if you don't watch Hawaii at Vanderbilt in the local Nashville High School football stadium?
Can you call yourself a college football team if your backup option is playing in a high school stadium when there's a professional stadium in your city?
Yeah, the Titans are like, sorry, dude.
Here's a question. Would it be worse to play at a high school stadium or to just like say no fans and they're just running it at the practice field?
A la Rutgers versus Princeton in 1892.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Like just fly both teams to the IPF in Provo and just have them go at it.
In all honesty, you'd get the same attendance at both, I think.
There will be games played during the height of COVID in 2020 that will have more fans than that football game.
Yeah, BYU versus like UTSA when there was 20 media members in the box. And that was it. That probably will have more people in attendance than Hawaii and Vanderbilt. But I'm going to watch it. What's that one? CBS absolutely. Sports?
That one is on the SEC network.
ESPN
adjacent.
Yeah. Brothers.
Just imagine a universe where Caleb Williams is like the closest to repeating a Heisman that we've ever seen. And the reason he doesn't is some dude was like, well, I wish we could have just seen more of him week one. If there had just been a little bit more film on him, we would have given it to him. But week one, we didn't know where to go to see him.
Week zero. If we just could have watched him play in week zero. Reggie Bush's Heisman moment that year he won the Heisman was against Fresno State, where he had like the super sick running down the sideline juke, threw the ball behind his back,
cut back,
ran it for a touchdown. Like that was against a Mountain West opponent early in the season. Like, sorry, Caleb, you could do the coolest thing in the world. You could like literally be diving 3 feet off the field, throwing the ball parallel a la Patrick Mahomes into the back corner of the end zone, into double coverage, and still a touchdown is scored. And no one is going to see it. ESPN even get the highlight rights to that game?
That's what I was saying. I don't even think I've seen a Pac-12 network highlight on Twitter.
If a man throws for 8 touchdowns in a single game and there isn't a network to show it, does it even count?
Did anyone actually see it? Did it happen? No, to answer that question. It wasn't a rhetorical question. The answer is no. You throw like 5 touchdowns on the Pac-12 network in week zero against San Jose State. Sorry, I don't make the rules, but that doesn't count towards your Heisman numbers. Like, only nationally broadcast games can count towards Heisman statistics.
Also, very bold of them to call it the Pac-12 network at this point. Just rip the Band-Aid off, call it the Pac-4 network, and just move on.
It represents the number of people who have access to it.
That, honestly, I feel like putting the game on the Pac-12 network is smart now because no one's going to be able to watch it. And what are the announcers going to be able to talk? Like the first Pac-12 game of the year, everyone's going to be watching just – and like if you're the announcer, like what do you say? Like this is the last season ever of the Pac-12. The Pac-12 is like no one watched this.
If I may be so bold in my trash talk for a second, not to make this about Utah, which like of course I'm going to make it about Utah. Conspiracy theory time. I think one of the reasons the national media loves Utah so much and just talks about what a hard-nosed football team they are is because a lot of the games where they don't look very good are behind the Pac-12 network wall. Like they have had plenty of games in the last like 2 or 3 seasons. Like in the year they won the Pac-12 in 2021, they only beat Arizona by like a touchdown. Like they looked awful in that game and no one saw it. Like losing to Oregon State on the road. No one saw that game. And so the only time anyone actually sees Utah is when they're playing like a big time game and they show up in those games. But like no one watches them lay an egg against Arizona on the road or, you know, against Oregon State. Like it just doesn't happen because no one can see it.
Which is weird considering like 2 of their nationally broadcast games this last year were losses to Oregon and loss to Florida. But they beat USC like on prime.
But they went toe to toe, Hunter, and that's what's important.
To a five and seven Florida team.
Losing a close game to a powerhouse brand is what's important. It shows that you've arrived. Because it shows
human.
That like
it shows
that you're on the same level. Because if you beat Florida in that game, well then Florida just sucks. Or if like if you beat Oregon in that game, well, Oregon just sucks. But if you lose a close one, everyone can still say, oh, you know, Florida is a great football team. But
Anthony Richardson, Heisman.
But think about it, like beating Ohio, like if they had beat Ohio State, the narrative becomes, oh, they like Ohio State was missing all these guys. Like no one really like Ohio State. Maybe Ohio State
that's
just
still
wasn't
my
that
narrative.
Good. But
that's
if,
still if, my narrative that if, Ohio State missing all these guys.
But when Ohio State wins, it's because Utah has arrived as a program, like because they were close and that's what's important.
Yeah, I definitely am like, no, Ohio State beat Utah despite missing like 20 starters. So
anyway, football's back, guys. I've
been that narrative forever.
Football is back. We have college football to watch this weekend. I had some college football to watch last weekend because I ain't too proud to beg, to quote some Temptations. So I was able to attend the legacy donor scrimmage, even though I am not a legacy donor myself.
Nice.
You don't have 10K to throw around?
No, I do not. But apparently I know people who do. And it's about who you know, I guess. So shout out to the awesome Give 'Em Hell Brigham subscriber who I just love so much for getting me those tickets because I really appreciate that.
But not enough to name drop them. Or just enough to not name drop them.
I would say just enough to not name drop him because I don't want everyone just like going to his DMs.
That's the thing is I didn't know that the donors could buy as many tickets as they wanted. Like had I known that, I would have been like, yeah. And then yeah, you send out some texts, but whatever.
What's out of curiosity, Joe? What's the vibe there? Like having been to like I went to like the alumni. You know, little bowl thing that they put on and then that like scrimmage and whatnot. Like what is it when it's a lot more exclusive like that? Did you notice anything different?
Honestly, no. Like there were a bunch of families there. I think there are a lot of people there like me where they just like knew one person who had, got a super wealthy uncle. And so they got them all tickets. So it was like a very similar vibe to like what a normal BYU football game would be like. I will say the funniest part was the loudest cheers of the day was when the field goal kickers made their kicks. Like I think Will Farron was 5 for 5 by my count and he hit 2 over 45 yards. And those kicks would have been good for 60. I think like he attempted a 48 yard field goal that landed about 20 rows up in the bleachers. And so he's definitely got a leg. We'll see what happens when, you know, the lights are on, but he's definitely got the leg for it. But like people were cheering like, oh my gosh, he made a kick. Like, he made a kick from over 30 yards. Like they were just so star. Like we're just so expecting the kick to get that no good signal that anytime a kick actually goes to the uprights, all it results in is just like oohs and ahs.
Well, I do wonder a little bit with just the nature of like who's allowed, right? The legacy donors and then sickos, right, that are willing to beg, had like Hunter said, had I known, right, you know, would have been on my hands and knees as well. I feel like you do end up with a group of people that know through the offseason kind of what's going on, and that's why you get those moments where like all of a sudden we're making field goals, and for a lot of us that have followed BYU sports, it's like, oh, like we've sucked at that all offseason, and now here's somebody that's maybe our saving grace.
Well, and they've been following the reports well enough to know the spring practice reports were abysmal from the kickers, at least from that first practice. And so they were following that enough. But like there were guys that like the people, it's a very educated crowd on BYU football because the fans that I was sitting around anyway, they were like calling players by name, even without a roster. Like they knew who the second string linebacker was. They knew who number 11 was on the defense without even looking at a roster.
My kind of people.
It really was like the BYU sicko crowd. And like they knew where like LJ Martin went to school. They knew his stats in high school. Like it's what I hope all BYU fans could be. But I guess in order to donate, you know, 10 grand to the BYU football program on an annual on an annual basis. Like, you got to be that kind of crazy.
Oh yeah. If I'm going to pay that much money, I'm going to know what I'm paid for, essentially.
Love it. So I'll kind of, I'll give you guys my recap. I, sicko over here, I actually took stats, throughout the entire game. So like it consisted of me on my phone in Google Sheets, typing out who threw the pass, who caught the pass, how many yards the pass was for, who made the tackle, all of that good stuff. And my wife was participating in that. Like, I was so afraid that when she found out I was taking stats, she would just like look at me weird. But no, she was like helping me do that. It's like, I'm typing and she goes, by the way, that was 17 who made that catch. And I'm like, sweet. I love you. I made such a good choice. Okay. So I'll go through the, kind of what I saw, my recap, some of the box score stuff that I saw, as I pull up the stats on a live show. I guess you guys have, before I start, do you guys have any questions about the scrimmage? Like, anything you guys want to know in particular?
Well, I had one of them answered, thanks to Coup Connect. I won't spill anything, but, let's see, any other questions? This is actually one that I've been thinking about a lot, just as we've been bringing in more transfers and bringing in, like, what does the team speed look like? I guess it's hard to judge against themselves, but.
Yeah. So I will say the linebackers I thought looked awesome. AJ Vongfichon is the real deal. Second play of the scrimmage, ran a zone read to Aiden Robbins. Aiden Robbins ran parallel to the line of scrimmage and tried to get the edge on AJ Vongfichon. And like, he just came in like a missile from his middle linebacker spot, full speed, wrapped him by his ankles, brought him down for a loss of one. And like, he looked like a speeding bullet. He was a lot faster than I thought he was going to be. So that, I mean, he really impressed me from that standpoint. I will say the depth on defense, I don't think that speed is quite there. I think Harrison Taggart's got that speed. He was in the backfield a couple times, on a couple blitzes that, and so I think he's got it. I think the corners have it. But we'll see. I mean, on offense, I don't think that top end speed is quite there it's definitely not like an Oregon level. I think that was one thing about the Oregon game last year that we were all pretty surprised by. When they ran that swing route to Cody Epps on 4th and 11, like, it was very clear Cody Epps was not fast enough to run that play and pick up that first down. And so I think that issue is still going to be there. But I think the scheme on offense is good enough where you can scheme around that and still look pretty good. Like, I don't think Aiden Robbins is going to be running for like any 100-yard touchdowns this year. But I do think he's going to run over some people. So again, I'll just kind of have to see it in live game action to really know. Stats from the scrimmage, Keaton Slovis, he played two drives before leaving with an illness. He was 5 for 5 for 70 yards and one touchdown. Jake Retzloff was 7 of 10, 83 yards, one touchdown with 3 carries for 27 yards and a touchdown. I will say about 48 of those 83 yards came on one touchdown pass. Cade Moore was wide open running down the sideline and Jake Retzloff hit him in stride. So it was a great throw. But most of the yards came on one play. And then Fennegan was 4 of 6 for 50 yards for one touchdown, 2 carries for 9 yards. I thought LJ Martin was actually the best running back on the field. And that includes with Aiden Robbins out there. LJ had 7 carries for 33 yards. Robbins kind of had a tough time getting going. I don't think he had any chunk runs from what I saw. But again, all reports are he still looks really good in camp. I think the D tackles just had a really good day. So something to monitor there. A lot of jet sweeps. Marion had 1 carry for 15 yards. Most impressive receivers on the day were Chase Roberts. He had 2 catches for 43 yards and a touchdown. And then Keelan Marion had one catch for 27 yards, but it was a very impressive, like, he's running a post route over the middle. Slovis threw it a little bit behind him and, like, going full speed, he flipped his hips, dove behind him, and made, like, an awesome, like, two-handed snag. Like, one thing that bothers me about a lot of D1 receivers now is they don't know how to catch with their hands. Everything has to be a body catch. Like, that was a legitimate, like, reach back, snag it with your fingertips kind of grab for a first down.
Well, as the president of his fan club, I expect nothing less, but continue.
Yeah. Hobbs Nyberg had a pretty good day running with the twos. He had three catches for 33 yards. I didn't see any catches from Lassiter. One was thrown to him, but Eddie Heckard made a really nice play on the ball, tipped it up, and Ben Bywater came down for an interception. Let's see. Epps had one catch for 20 yards. I think he's pretty banged up. He was the only action I saw him get was with the twos, and what the twos means is pretty much the threes, because the ones were because the top five receivers were kind of rotating in with that first team group, but Epps was mostly running his reps with Fennigan, which I thought was kind of interesting, but I think he's probably a little bit more banged up than most people are letting on. So we'll see what he looks like for game one of the season. They might just be resting him for precautionary reasons. He was dressed. Like, Hill didn't play. I didn't see any other, like, major holdouts. Banya didn't play a ton. Like I said, Slovis left after two drives, but that doesn't sound like it'll be a long-term issue. But overall takeaways, I think the first team offense looks really good. Like, one of the two drives Slovis had, where he really got to sling it, he was 4 for 4 for 70 yards and a touchdown. And the two throws he had to Roberts were, like, pinpoint accuracy, where I thought the throws were going to be picked off, and then somehow Roberts comes screaming out of it with the football. Like, it was just like, there were a couple of wow throws where I'm just like, okay, Slovis has got it. Like, pretty much all of my fears about Slovis going into the season were satisfied by that drive. I think he's going to be pretty good as long as he's healthy.
Yeah, I love that. I actually, so before the show, we were kind of talking about what we wanted to cover today, and Hunter had mentioned that we had done this show last year. And so I went back and had listened to it. And one of the things actually that stood out to me was in the same practice scrimmage, was that the offense actually really struggled against the defense. And at the time, we thought that was, like, kind of a big deal, like a good thing. And then obviously going into the season, we've had Hunter shaking his head because he knows, obviously, we all do. But did it feel like one side of the ball really outclassed the other? Did it feel like anybody was – does that make sense? Like,
yeah,
trying to pose?
Yeah. So, I mean, the defense kept it pretty vanilla. So, like, think of it as like a preseason game. So one thing I know is – one thing that did stand out to me was there wasn't much of a pass rush. Granted, I don't remember seeing a ton of blitzes. So I am not completely sold on the defensive line just yet. But from what I've been told, the offensive line has had struggles blocking the blitz packages that the defense has sent at them. So I know for a fact that the offensive line is going to be great in pass blocking. So the fact that they're struggling with the defense's blitzes makes me think, okay, there's going to be more pass rush than there was last year. I feel pretty confident in saying that. I thought the offense won the day. Defense forced a 3-and-out on the first drive. They had one interception in team, and then I think there were three total touchdowns scored on, like, I want to say like 6 or 7 drives in team. So it was pretty even, but the offense looked really good. Offense went 5 for 5 in the 2-point session. So, like, short yardage situations on the goal line, offense won that going away. 2-minute drill. I think the offense at least kicked a field goal on every possession. So I would say the offense definitely won the day, which makes me a little concerned about the defense. The one thing I was impressed with was the rush defense looked really good. And I think we all assume Aiden Robbins is going to be awesome. The fact that he couldn't get going at all makes me think our D tackles are much improved from where they were last year. We'll see what the edge rushers look like against an offensive line that doesn't have, you know, Kingsley, Asatsua Mataia, and Caleb Etienne. But I don't know. I think I left feeling more confident about the offense, a little bit less confident in the defense. I think the defense still probably has more of an uphill climb than I thought they did a week ago. But again, like, it's just a scrimmage, super vanilla. Jay Hill isn't going to be throwing out anything super complex for Uncle. I don't know what's the name of a generic Mormon uncle, but he's not going to be throwing out like super complex stuff for just to get oohs and ahs from a scrimmage crowd when we're going to be saving those for Arkansas.
Love it.
And that's our
and that concludes our post game recap.
Scrimmage recap. Go ahead.
I was just going to ask, like, from based on what you guys, I guess from what I just shared and from what you guys have kind of heard in camp, how confident should we feel in the defense's improvement?
I mean, can't get much worse.
That's kind of where I stand. It's like,
I feel very confident in their improvement because they brought in talented players and they brought in a talented coach, and it can't really get much worse than it was at a lot of times last year. Like, they had some good moments, but they had a lot of bad moments. And I don't think the bar is very high for relative improvement, right? Like, do I think that this is going to be like a top 30 BYU top 30 defense nationally? No. I think it could maybe crack that top 50. I think you have really, really talented pieces. Like, I think AJ is an extremely talented piece. I think Eddie is a very talented, like, pretty much all the corners, Eddie, Camden, and Jacob are incredibly talented pieces. I'm very intrigued by Mo Bamba. You know, there's talk of him potentially competing with Camden for that third cornerback spot. The question marks are obviously going to be safety and defensive line. I think safety I was confident in, and now with the injury to Micah, I'm less confident. I think it's going to be ups and downs, right? Like, will we see it as bad as the defense looked against Arkansas and KJ Jefferson breaking 100 tackles and then running for 30 yards? Like, I don't think it's going to be – I don't think we're going to get lows like that anymore. I don't think we're going to get a low of Michael Mayer going for like 500 receiving yards and a million touchdowns and single-handedly beating this BYU defense. Like, I think stuff like that is not going to happen with Jay Hill. I think they're going to be able to adapt a little quicker and better, and they're going to be able to be a lot more versatile with the different athletes that they have, right? Like, you talked about Harrison Taggart and being a speed guy. You have Ben Bywater, you have Max Tooley and AJ. Like, I think it's a very versatile defense. We'll see what Chaz Ayu can do, right? Coming off of injuries and, you know, not playing a lot of football the last couple of years. So there's going to be bad moments, but I think there's going to be a lot less bad moments. And I think there's going to be a lot more good moments this year for the BYU defense than we saw a season ago. But again, that kind of speaks to how bad the defense was at times last season.
Oh, yeah. I don't think, at least I hope not, I don't think there's going to be any games where it's just like, man, BYU would be better off if they just didn't put a defense out there, because at least the ball will get back to the offense quickly.
Yeah.
Like, I think the defense is going to have a pulse, which is kind of a huge indictment on what the defense was last year. But I think, like, again, the defense is going to put up a fight in every single game that they play in, which is a very low bar to set. But I think that can also benefit the offense because they're going to be on the field more. And I think, like, that's been the offense's issue for a long time, is they haven't had the opportunities. Like, BYU's points per play. Like, I think that's a great way to measure, like, yards per play and points per play are a great way to measure offensive success. BYU has been top 15 in yards per play and points per play for 3 years now, like straight seasons with different offensive personnel. I feel confident with different quarterbacks. I feel confident that BYU's offense can duplicate that this year. It's just a matter of, like, if BYU can go top 15 in points per, like, yards per play again, and the defense is like top 60 in the country, I think this BYU team can win 7 games at least.
I'm just afraid of, like, the moment where BYU does give up a big play, or, you know, they lose a game and the BYU defense gives up 38 points to Texas or whatever it is. And, like, BYU fans being like, oh, see, like, same old, right? Like, to expect that in year one of Jay Hill and Sione Puha and Kelly Papinga, like, this defense is going to suddenly be like the Bronco defenses with Kyle Van Noy and Fred Warner, where, like, the defense really carried the offense at times, especially in that, like, early years of independence, right? Like, the BYU offense was not very good the first few years of independence with Jake Heaps and Riley Nelson, and, you know, you got James Larkin there for a little bit. Like, those teams were really carried by their dominant defense. And now you're seeing it the opposite side of that coin, where the last few years it's been carried by a dominant offense. And I don't think it's going to instantly go back to those, like, Van Noy, Bronco Mendenhall defenses, right? Like, give it time. Like, it might not even be this year, but this is a long-term investment with Jay Hill and with his defense, right? Like, if by next, the hope is by year two, by year three, and maybe by year four in the Big 12, like, BYU defense, really, you get the guys in, you develop them, and they turn into key contributors. And now suddenly you're back to those days of having a great defense, having great corners, a dominant defensive line, right? Like we used to see from BYU.
Yeah, I think to echo what you said, Hunter, I mean, along the same lines of, it can't get any worse. Like, it wasn't working, right? So
yeah,
if nothing else, you're trying to do something different. And just like the act of trying something new, when rather than, you know, beating our heads against the wall repeatedly, watching continuously, like, dropping 8 all the time, never getting off the field, like, always giving up points, like, being able to see, just being able to look and say that doesn't work and try something new, that's already a win. Mm-hmm. Like, it shows a mindset that is one of growth, or at least one of experimentation of, okay, well, this didn't work, we're going to try this. And I have full confidence that if that doesn't work, be it week 3 against Arkansas or later on, that they're going to go into practice the following week for game prep and go, okay, what can we try now that's going to work instead? I think the biggest thing that I've heard, just as I've seen, you know, fall camp, I've seen media availability interviews, I think one of the things that stood out was an interview with AJ Bonkvachon, where they were kind of interviewing him about the Ben Bywater interception that Joe was talking about in this fall scrimmage. And one of the things that he said was that anytime we can get off, any down that we can get off the field is a good down. And I think when you look at defenses in the past, I have no doubt that guys like Isaiah Heron or like Hanneman or any of those guys, like, I have no doubt that they probably feel the same way, but I feel like there's actually a lot more weight behind it, because it's not only a player belief thing to get off the field, but it's like a coaching belief thing. And they're now working in tandem to actually just get the defense off the field. They're not worried about, well, can we just, you know, can we just give up a field goal and hope that our offense scores? It's like, can we go 3 and out? Can we stop them from having points? Can we turn the ball over? Can we create points of our own? It's a, it's just a different mindset. And I think that in itself, like, when you have a growth mindset, a challenge accepting mindset, that's when you see special things begin to, like, start. Whereas before, I just don't feel like we had that. It was just a very vanilla, like, we're going to do the same old thing all the time. And it just didn't work. And it killed us.
And people would throw their hands in the air and be like, why isn't this working?
Yes.
Like, on paper, this should be working. And it's not.
It never works. Not for anyone. But it just might work for us.
So, perfect. And then let's just kind of flip it over to the offense. Like, what are your expectations for how good this offense can be?
Is it great? My expectation is a same as it was last year, but with the ability to convert 3rd and 1s and 4th and 1s. Like, if BYU could convert a fourth and or like a third and less than two, like, is that two more wins for BYU football last year? Because you had the ECU and you had the Notre Dame.
I mean, I'll go one further. Like, a team that, like, an offense that can run the ball consistently. Like, yeah. I was kind of curious. Like, I was thinking about BYU's record, like, how they're going to look. I know, like, Power Five does not equal good. But one thing I've been thinking about is, okay, thinking back to BYU's last two seasons, I think we can argue that the last two seasons have been the most successful BYU's ever had against Power Five opponents. Mm-hmm. And so the question is, okay, how did the offense look in those games versus Power Five opponents? Because for some reason in my head, I'm thinking like, okay, Utah, like the offense had an okay game, but not a great game. Like mm-hmm. Arizona State offense had an okay game, not a great game. Like Oregon last year, Baylor, like all of those, like in my head, I don't see those as like necessarily offensive dominant performances. And so I went in and looked at, okay, what was BYU's yards per play during those games? BYU averaged last season 6.1 yards per play against Power Five opponents, which would have been like 25th in the country. And that includes like against Stanford, against Notre Dame, against Oregon. Like there's some good, some bad in there, but I think BYU's offensive production can still be about the same no matter like whether it's G5, Power Five. Like BYU's efficiency is still pretty good, but when you take out pass plays and when you take out the game against like that abysmal Stanford run defense, BYU averaged 3.6 yards per carry against Power Five opponents last year. Like 3.6, you got to be better than that. And so that's where like if our ground game can have a pulse, which as deep as our running back room is, I think BYU can average close to 5 yards a carry this year. I mean, if that's what we're looking at, I think this offense can be better than last year's was. Yeah, I think the passing production is going to be about the same. I think Keaton can throw for 3,000 yards and 30 touchdowns. Like based on what I've seen from him out of camp, I think like that's a real possibility. And I think our receiving room is good enough and deep enough, and our tight ends are good enough and deep enough to sustain that over a 12 game season, even with injuries.
Yeah, I guess the question is does that hold true playing a tougher schedule? Like, because the talent might be the same and they might be just as good, if not better. But obviously, when you're playing Texas instead of ECU or Oklahoma instead of whoever else, you know, like that might.
That's why I kept it just to Power Five opponents. Fact,
when you go back after the fact and look at the stats on the season and you see, like, oh, like they Keaton threw for less yards than Jaron, or this offense didn't average as many yards per game as they did a season ago. That doesn't mean it was a worse offense. They were just playing Oklahoma State and Texas and Oklahoma instead of Wyoming, Utah State, and ECU, right? So, but I agree with you. Like, on going into this year, like the offense should not miss a step from really what it's been the last 2 or 3 years. The quarterback is good. It's an NFL level quarterback. It's a wide receiver room that has ridiculous talent across the board, like 5 guys deep of could be a wide receiver one on a lot of other teams. You have maybe the deepest running back room ever that BYU's ever had. Like, is that crazy to say that? Like, I mean, Hinkley and Miles both looked great at times last year before Miles had his injury. Hinkley really came on strong at the end of the year. Then you bring in Aiden Robbins and you have Deion Smith, and LJ Martin apparently is like one of the most impressive of the entire bunch. So I think you have legitimately like 5 stud running backs. You have an offensive lineman that's going to have a first round draft pick at left tackle of, you know, the biggest, most physically, like what's the word? He's huge. Caleb Etienne's freaking huge.
he's
like,
imposing.
Imposing. That giant was the one. So, like, again, theoretically, this offense should not miss a beat. They should be just as good as they were in 2021. They should be just as good as they were in 2022, if not better than 2022, just because of the run game. And that's not a knock on Chris Brooks. We are Chris Brooks truthers on this podcast. But yeah, like I think they'll be able to run the ball more consistently. And at the end of the year, even if the numbers don't show it, I think that this BYU offense will be just as good as they've been the last few years.
Yeah, no, I love it. I think for me, the question of can we be consistent is it falls on the same group that it's fallen on for every offense of every year of every team since the dawn of time. And it's how good is the offensive line? If you don't have an offensive line, nothing works. You can't run the ball. You can't throw the ball. You can't move the ball. And BYU, I think one of the biggest blessings and one of the reasons why, as Joe said, these points per play, yards per play, these measurements are so high is because you have an offensive line that can create time to be able to push the ball downfield in the pass game and to be able to open up big time holes to create for these running backs to be able to make moves in space and be able to get upfield. And this is an offensive line that whether you're playing P5 teams or not, they're going to shine. They're really, really good. They're incredibly talented. Last year, they were the number one pass blocking defense in the country, or excuse me, offensive line in the country. And so if you can maintain that base, you can continue to be consistent. And this offensive line has given me no reason to think that they're going to drop off from last year. And to be honest, I don't think if it's the Big 12 or the Big 10 or the Pac-12 or whoever, I don't think it really matters. Like if the offensive line is good, then you have a chance. And the offensive line is good enough to give us a chance.
So I just finished my analysis on the past two seasons against Power 5 opponents, BYU has averaged 4.92 yards per carry. But if I eliminate the game against Virginia and the game against Stanford, where BYU combined for, I think, 700 yards rushing between those two games, we're looking at about 4.1 yards per carry against Power 5 opponents. Like, you got to be better than that. For as good as this offensive line is, the run blocking hasn't been up to snuff. So that's where I want to see. Like, the fact that at the scrimmage on Saturday, like, there weren't a ton of, like, long runs being broken. I really, really, really want to see this offensive line just toughen up and be road graders. Like the line is good enough to do that. I think it's just a mentality at this point where, you gotta give your guy a chance. I don't care how good Aiden Robbins is. If you're getting blown up off the line of scrimmage and you're not getting push, it's not going to matter if you got Derrick Henry back there. Like this, the running game is not going to be successful. And I actually, hot take, I think a lot of people have said, oh, this season's going to go as slow as goes. This season's going to go as the run game goes. If this team can run the ball consistently, I think this team is going to win a lot of games. They're going to score a lot of points. But again, if we get more of what we've seen the last, I don't know, like if we get what we've seen the last somewhat last two seasons, I think there's going to be, there could be problems. But let's get into a little bit more of our season predictions. We got about probably like 15 minutes to go through 12 games since we always seem to go over. But okay, how do you guys want to do this? I have the S&P Plus spreads pulled up. Do we want to go like straight win loss, or do we want
let's just go win loss
against the spread?
Win loss. Give the people what they want. Well, because we'll do the spreads game by game, right? Like that's next week when we preview Sam Houston, we'll pick the spread, we'll do our hot takes, all that sort of stuff, which is crazy to talk about. That next week when we record, we'll be back into like our season game previews where we're giving hot takes, we're previewing opponents, we're picking spreads, right? We're getting everything, all our predictions wrong. But for now, let's just do straight up win loss at the end of the season. What will BYU's record be?
Okay. Let's start with Sam Houston. I am going to do against the spread on this one because I think we all have Sam Houston as a win. According to S&P Plus, BYU is a 25-point favorite. Does BYU cover the spread?
BYU wins. I'm going to save my spread pick for next week.
Okay.
BYU wins. I'll give my spread pick. I don't think they cover. There's no Kalani and running up scores. I don't think they cover.
I don't think they'll cover either, mostly because I think Sam Houston is a little better than most will give them credit for. Their offense was abysmal last season, but they also sat a bunch of players with the intention of playing them in their inaugural FBS season. New offensive coordinator. We will find out a little bit how good this defense is, because if they struggle to stop Sam Houston's offense, I think we might be in for a long season. But I'm going to say they win it by closer to 17 than they do by 25. SUU, dub.
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 I didn't even bother putting a spread on that because...
2-0.
Okay, Arkansas. This is where we really find out first test for this BYU team.
Oh... I classify BYU games into three categories. Wins, toss-ups, and long shots. This is like right in between like the long shots and the toss-ups. But because it's the hype train, I'm going to say this is firmly in the toss-up category. I think we've seen it before where BYU gets pummeled 1 year by an opponent and then turns around the next year and beats them, right? Like Wisconsin is the most notable, where Wisconsin came to Provo, killed BYU. Next year, BYU goes on the road and beats Wisconsin. Baylor again, you know, 2021, BYU goes on the road, loses to Baylor. The next year, they play them at home, they win. Last year, BYU loses to Arkansas, gets embarrassed at home with those embarrassing helmets, and now they are going on the road. And for that reason, I've now just talked myself into saying that that Arkansas game is a dub.
Me too.
Dang.
You talked.
I was about to say it was a loss, and then I started following that train of thought. And I'm like, well, you know what? That's a win.
There is no rational reason BYU should go on the road and beat Arkansas. But I'm totally with you. Like every year, yeah. BYU does this where there's like a benchmark game that BYU has circled on their calendar. Like, okay, this is where we were last year. This is where we want to be this year. Like, and this is the common opponent between the two seasons. And they'll lose the first one, win the second one. So I'm with you. Like, it's
a dub.
You want to pick it as a dub, right? Yeah, like, it makes no sense. But I mean, you want to pick it as a dub.
You look at the – okay, so – and here's the two – here's my kind of prediction with this is you look at the two big ones, the Baylor and the Wisconsin. I would argue, like, Boise State tends to be one.
Oh, similarly. Gap? I think I know where you're going.
But, like, Aaron Roderick – starts pulling out some of the funkiest shiz when it's part two of a game. Like you look at like the trick plays we ran against Baylor, the trick plays we ran against Wisconsin, trick plays that we've ran against Boise, like that you talk about benchmark. It kind of feels like it's a benchmark for the players, but also for the coaches, where like Kalani's looking at these guys and just like, okay, just empty the tub in this game. Well,
and to go beyond just that, like the gap between like where BYU was in like how not close the game against Wisconsin was in 2017 versus 2018, or like how not close the game was against Baylor in 2021. Like the Arkansas game, I at least felt was competitive until the end. Like Arkansas turned on the jets a little bit in the fourth quarter, but I felt like BYU was, they looked competitive in that game where they didn't even look competitive against Baylor. Half. Like they look competitive for at least a half, where I didn't think they looked competitive at all against Wisconsin and Baylor the first time around. So I think like the gap that they need to close against Arkansas is smaller than the gap they needed to close against Baylor and Wisconsin. So I can see that being a dub for the sake of our credibility in the on the national sphere. I'm going to pick a loss just so that we have a little bit of respectability.
Since when do we care about credibility? What are we doing?
Okay. Kansas.
This is in a toss-up category for me. Again, like Kansas, they had one of their best years in recent memory last season. They went to a bowl game. Like it was a very, very good year for Kansas. Jalen Daniels is an awesome quarterback. I look at kind of the games they've won last year, and it's kind of eh. Like Tennessee Tech, West Virginia, Houston, Duke, and Iowa State. Like they start; those were the games that where they started the year 5-0. Then they lost three straight. Granted, that was TCU, Oklahoma, Baylor, and then they beat Oklahoma State, and then they lost four to close out the year. So while they had an awesome year, and I think that they're obviously it's a better Kansas football than we've seen for the last decade plus, I'm going to go that for a win for BYU just because I feel like BYU is just a better team. Like, they've been a better team for the last decade. They had a better year last year. Like, there's no reason why suddenly Kansas should be the better team. I mean, and they could very well win that game, but it's going to be BYU's first ever Big 12 game. Yes, it's on the road. But I think BYU gets up for it. I think Kalani has the boys ready. And I think BYU gets the win against Kansas.
Yeah, I think we beat Arkansas and then we beat Kansas. I just similarly, it's not how you start a year, it's how you finish. And I just don't think they're carrying any sort of momentum in, like Hunter said, to think that they should beat or they should at least be like noticeably better than BYU. And I think that BYU does have the guys to be able to go in there and win. And like Hunter said, I think Kalani, like, being able to start your Big 12 like career, your Big 12 like stand with a dub, I think means a lot more to BYU than it does playing a new Big 12 member for Kansas. And so I think that BYU is going to have just a little extra juice in that game.
I agree for all the reasons you mentioned. I think who Kansas was at the end of last season is probably a better reflection of who they are than what they were at the beginning of the season. I love Jalen Daniels. I think their quarterback is awesome. I think their offense is going to be pretty good. It's going to be a shootout. But again, I don't see it with Kansas. I think they're probably still a few years and a few recruiting classes away. So I'm going BYU in that. Cincy,
dub.
I think that's a dub. I think.
I mean, come on, first ever home Big 12 game at night at Lavelle. Come on, that's a dub.
Plus, Cincy stretch coming into that, like they're just coming off their first Big 12 game against Oklahoma at home.
And new coach.
New coach. I think that's a dub.
Yep.
If it's any indication, based off of ticket prices, this is the second most expensive ticket in Provo this year. I think that shows that there's fans that are going to be there. And
well, yeah, I mean, it's the first home Big 12 game ever.
Absolutely.
Like, it's going to be sold out.
New field, everybody's going to be humming. It's just might be one of those nights. You know what I'm saying? Could be one of those nights.
TCU, we'll speed round, keep go through all of these because we'll obviously do more in-depth previews as we get to the games. But speed round at TCU.
I think it's probably a loss.
This one's a long shot for me. However, here's my first hot take of the season. TCU lost their starting quarterback, Max Duggan. They lost their leading rusher, Kendre Miller, and they lost their leading receiver, Quentin Johnston. Eerily similar to kind of the Baylor situation where they played BYU in 2021 and they lost their leading passer, rusher, and wide receiver. Dude. And then BYU came in and beat them the next year.
To talk me to 6-0.
BYU beats TCU on the road for the upset.
6-0. Jeez, could you imagine? Could you imagine how absolutely nuts will be?
I mentioned last year's episode. It went exactly like this. And guess who led the charge then?
Me.
That guy. Hunter.
He pointed to Joe, but yes.
Oh, well, on my screen. Whatever.
On my screen, definitely pointed to Joe.
Okay, Texas Tech. I think that's a win.
Home game, Texas Tech. I was adamant in our first when the schedule came out that this was going to be a dub, and I'm not changing my mind now.
I think it's a win.
I'm not. I am pretty high on Texas Tech, but the more I look into them, they were 7-5. Were fortunate to win a lot of the games that they did. I think they're very good, but I think again, night game, Lavelle Edwards Stadium, first at, like homecoming. I think that's a dub. Texas.
Quinn Ewers.
I think they exercise some demons. Texas does. I think we lose that game.
I mean, rational thought has to say Texas wins that game, but like, is Texas ever really back? Like, BYU doesn't lose to Texas.
Quinn Ewers is good. Like, he's so good. And this is last year playing. It's going to be near impossible, I think, victory for BYU. But they get the victory nonetheless. Jeez, on the road at Wisconsin was a near impossible win. Texas always has these games.
Plus 7-0, Joe. This is
8-0. BYU owns Texas, those frauds. They own Texas.
It's crazy that you can talk yourself into 8-0, though, isn't it?
I mean, I'm just going game by game.
All right, West Virginia.
That's a dub. West Virginia stinks.
Yeah.
They're not going to be good. I think it's definitely a trap game. Like, if there's any game that could be the Liberty situation.
Yeah, Liberty alert on this one for sure.
But dub. ISU, they don't even have a football team right now.
Yeah, their quarterback's off the team, right?
They're literally in, like, their best, their RB1, quarterback one, and I'm pretty sure one of their best offensive linemen are literally all in jail because of gambling issues.
Yep.
They're not in jail, but, like, don't sue us, but they have a lot of issues, allegedly. And I'm not even sure they're going to have a roster by the time they get to Provo. We'll see. Yep.
Allegedly.
Oklahoma.
What's not alleged is that's a dub.
Oklahoma, I think, like, BYU is going to beat one of TCU, Texas, Oklahoma, and Oklahoma State, and Arkansas, at least one of those. I think Oklahoma is that one. Senior night, Lavelle Edwards Stadium, it's already sold out, night game. Oklahoma, by that point, who knows what they look like. They were 6-7 last year. Either they're going to get a super disinterested Oklahoma who didn't beat any of their goals, or they're going to get a super disinterested Oklahoma because they're looking forward to the Big 12 title game. I think that's a dub.
Yeah,
BYU wins. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Drew.
No, you got it.
I was going to say BYU wins one of those five. Try BYU wins four of those five, Joe. That's a dub. At home, November senior night, Dylan Gabriel, that freaking bum, coming to Provo. BYU owns Oklahoma. BYU owns Dylan Gabriel. BYU beat Oklahoma in 09 with Sam Bradford, and he was a good quarterback. No offense to Dylan Gabriel. I think he's a fine quarterback. But BYU also owns him in 2020 Boca Raton Bowl. So BYU.
I'm not a believer in Dylan Gabriel. Oklahoma State.
Whoa.
Trevor didn't give his Oklahoma one.
Hold on. Oh, sorry. So I mentioned
that Cincinnati was the second most expensive ticket. So, like, as low as, like, $65 is what I'm getting on here. The low for Oklahoma is $132. I mean, it's
already sold out.
Twice as much. Yes.
Yep.
Absolutely already sold out. This is a game that, like, irregardless of how BYU's season goes, it's going to be, like, the stadium is going to be packed.
I got goosebumps thinking about that game.
Like that is a game that everyone is just going to want to be at because it's Oklahoma, because of 09, just because it's probably, as Joe said, like, if Oklahoma is doing great, we get to play spoiler. If they're not doing great, doesn't matter. We get to play and potentially beat Oklahoma. Like, that's a tough, tough, tough game for an Oklahoma team to walk into. I think that's a dub.
Joe had to go. He hopped off. Oklahoma State's the last game of the year at Oklahoma State road game. Joe says that his game is a dub. They have to replace too much, and their culture clearly has issues.
I think this is a loss. I think this is one of those situations where, I mean, I hope I'm wrong, obviously, but our first Big 12 season, full slate of Power 5 teams. Like, I think we limp into this game. I just don't think we have enough in the tank to overcome Stillwater that late in the season.
At Oklahoma State, that's a dub. Oklahoma State's all right. This is like a game BYU should. This is kind of in those, like, should win category for me.
Really?
Yeah. Like, I think Oklahoma State is, like, a fine Big 12 team. I think they had, you know, they're always one of those good, not great category, right? Like, competitive, but not like a team where you're like, oh my gosh, like, those guys, like, they're never like a fringe playoff team. They're never really in the running to be like a top 10 or even a top 5 team in the country. So for that reason, and because, like Joe said, like, they kind of have weird cultural stuff going on, guys transferring out, I think BYU gets the win, even though it's on the road.
Which puts you at what?
12-0? That puts me at 12-0, Trevor.
I mean, to be fair, I think I put myself at 10-2. I think I talked myself into 10-2.
So then we go to New York City for the Heisman ceremony with Keaton Slovis, who's one of the three finalists. And then I'll save my playoff predictions. But I think last year I had BYU 15-0 beating Georgia in the national championship.
Yep.
So I guess, well, first there'd be conference championship game. BYU probably a rematch for Texas. But again, as I've stated, BYU owns Texas. So that's 13-0. And then we'll pick the playoff games when they get here.
Keaton Slovis, overtakes Caleb Williams because in the eyes of the voters, Caleb Williams only played 11 games
because that one extra game.
We've come full circle.
Yep.
Because no one saw them play San Jose State in week zero.
Yep. Just a disclaimer, that's not my actual prediction, but I'll cut that part out. Yeah. Real football. Next week, we are going to be previewing an actual opponent for BYU football. Tomorrow is the first. We're counting down our top 10 players. We were going to do a web article, top 10 players, probably not going to happen just because Chandler got married. Shout out to Chandler. And he is on his honeymoon and just other life stuff going on. But we will have graphics. We do have our list. That will be starting to go out tomorrow. Counting down the top 10 players for BYU football going into the 2023 season. We'll also do some cool like countdown days looking back at past BYU players. So on social media, stay tuned for that. Any parting thoughts, Trevor?
It's here. It's college football eve, frankly. And I was going to talk about this actually at the very beginning of the show, but I feel like I've accidentally created like the perfect opening college football weekend. So like Florida and Utah play each other on Thursday.
Yep.
At 6. Go Gators. I'll be chomping all night at home on the couch. But then Friday morning with some buddies, I'm playing in a 4-man scramble tournament. We all work together. So we all got the day off.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're going to play in this tournament, right?
Love it.
Get to enjoy the rest of the day. And then I get to wake up Saturday to more college football, capping it off in Provo versus Sam Houston at 8:15.
Ooh, baby.
The weekend.
It's here. Our national nightmare is over. 11 days, 35 minutes, and 34 seconds as I'm reading that. Obviously, much sooner for the people who are listening. Till BYU kicks off versus Sam Houston in Lavelle Edwards Stadium, September 2nd, 8:15 p.m. Mountain Time. We're going to preview that game next week. We're going to give you our hot takes. You guys kind of already picked against the spread. We'll pick against the spread again. We'll see what ESPN has the line. Real excited. Really, really excited. Even if BYU goes 5-7, right, and they lose to TCU, Texas, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, Texas Tech, and Arkansas, and Kansas, like it'll still be – it's a bad day of college football beats a good day anywhere else, even on the golf course. So,
amen.
We love college football. We obviously love BYU. So stoked for the season. Thanks for giving us a listen. Don't forget to subscribe, do all those fun stuff, and we'll talk to you guys next week as we talk real college football. We're talking opponents, opponent preview next week. Go Cougs.
Go Cougs.